Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and the theme in the second hour today is The End is Near. Each of my guests will talk about the end of something. My first guest has tracked worldwide debt over the past 30 years and has drawn some conclusions. We'll discuss his findings from his book, Endgame, The End of the Debt Supercycle, and how it changes everything. My second guest spends his time traipsing around cemeteries across the world looking for the final resting place of the famous and the infamous. He'll tell us where the bodies are truly buried from his book, Where Are They Buried? How Did They Die? Fitting ends for, and final resting places for some of the famous, infamous, and noteworthy. My third guest is back for a second time. He's a professional sports handicapper, which means he sells his betting advice to subscribers. We'll break down the men's NCAA basketball Final Four for 2011. And as always, if you want to talk to one of my guests or join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. John Molden is a renowned financial expert, a multiple New York Times best-selling author, and a pioneering online commentator. His weekly newsletter, Thoughts from the Frontline, was one of the first publications to provide investors with free, unbiased information and guidance. Today, it is one of the most widely distributed investment newsletters in the world. He's regularly seen on TV and in the national print media. John is the president of Millennium Wave Investments. John is the father of seven children, five of whom are adopted. He lives in Dallas, Texas. He earned his bachelor's degree from Rice University, I won't tell you when, and his master's in divinity degree from Southwestern Baptist Theology Seminary back in the 1970s. Welcome to the show, John. How are you?
It's good to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest, because you are truly a thought leader in this field, and I'm glad to have you on the show so you can explain what you have found from your study of debt over the past 30 years or so. But let's start with the title of your book. You call it The Debt Supercycle. What is the debt supercycle that you write about?
Well, at the end of World War II, many European countries were just simply devastated, and the U.S. had to pay down its World War II debt. But by 1950, we were kind of ready to hit the reset button everywhere. And we started out as individuals and as a country borrowing small amounts of money. And for every dollar of debt that we borrowed, we'd get $5 worth of GDP growth. Towards the end of this cycle, 2007, we were getting only about 50 cents for every dollar of debt. And we had built up into, 370% of debt to GDP. Individuals stopped borrowing, businesses are paying down their debt, and the government has stepped in and is running up large debt. But there's an end to this process. We're seeing the end in Greece and Ireland and Portugal. England's trying to deal proactively with it. Japan is a bug in search of a windshield. Their debt is just monstrous, and that will begin to fall down around their ears in a few years. And when governments have to start pulling back or restructure, as investors, as citizens, it's a fundamentally different economic environment. It's a tectonic plate shift. And for you guys out in California, you understand about tectonic
plates. We do.
They can cause some things to go bump in the night. we in the U.S., our national conversation is going to have to be how much Medicare do we want and how do we want to pay for it? You look at the polls, 70% of the people, 65, 70% of the people, even the Republicans want to keep Medicare in roughly the form that it is, or, you know, or improve it, but we want to keep our Medicare. But another 70% of the people don't want to increase taxes. And yet, we have $40 trillion of unfunded liabilities that's coming at us over the next 30 or 40 years. We're running a $1.5 trillion deficit. You cannot grow your debt faster than the growth of the country. It's what's called nominal GDP. And that would be about $400 billion right now. So we need to cut about $1.1 trillion out of our current spending, and that's a lot. That's, you know, 30% of our budgets. That's 50% more than we're collecting in tax revenues. And cuts like that, you just can't do by saying, well, we'll cut a little out of defense and a little bit out of education, and we'll take some away from, you know, public radio. That doesn't do it. You have to deal with Medicare, and you have to deal with Social Security. And those are the things that politicians don't want to talk about. But that's the conversation we have to have. Otherwise, if we keep along the path that we're going, the bond market's going to look up one day and go, you know, the United States looks kind of like Greece. We think we'd like a little bit more money for the...
the risk that we are taking. John, you there? All right, John, are you there? Well, we seem to have lost John, but he was about to say the risk that you're taking. He was on a roll there as well. We're talking to John Malden, author of the book Endgame, The End of the Debt Supercycle and How It Changes Everything. So when he get him back on the line, we'll continue along this line of reasoning, talking about how we got to the situation that we got to, some of the remedies that we are going to have to take once we get there. In fact, he has several solutions that he will propose for us that will help get us out of the debt situation that we have built up over the past 20-plus years or so. The debt supercycle, which is something that John has and his partner have tracked for a number of years, is finally getting to critical mass, and actually came to an end, according to them, in the year 2008. We'll ask him when we get him back on the line how and why it did come to the end and why in 2008 everything hit the fan, as it were. Also, we're going to talk about what government needs to do in order to change this cycle, both here in the United States and possibly talk about other countries abroad as well. As examples, we'll talk about some of the countries that are suffering from the debt supercycle. John himself mentioned a couple in his answer to you. He mentioned Portugal, Greece, United Kingdom, and Ireland. We'll talk about those as well. And now we have John back on the line. Hi, John. Welcome back.
I'm sorry, Billy. Just, you know, let's hear it for technology.
The technology does have its advantages and sometimes its drawbacks.
What part of my brilliant repartee did we drop at?
Well, we're talking about the debt supercycle. You were getting into recommendations of what we want to do. Before we get into recommendations, though, we got the idea of how we got to where we are in the debt supercycle. My question to you is a follow-on question. How and why did it end in the year 2008? What brought it to a head then?
Well, it was the subprime crisis. And the individuals ran up against their limit to borrow. I mean, we were lending money to people that couldn't pay. And then, you know, we had too much debt. Banks had to cut back. And then the government stepped in. But they're going to run up against their ability to borrow money at some point. The bond market will say, you know, $1 trillion deficits aren't a rational thing. And we want higher interest. Well, that changes the environment. That means we as taxpayers are paying more interest out of our national budget. And eventually you have a crisis unless you do something beforehand.
All right. And that makes sense. Now, the government has a couple of options here to deal with the impact of the debt supercycle, as you call it. They can inflate, or they can default on some of the bonds that they have, or they can devalue the currency. None of the three are particularly good. Play out those three scenarios. What do they look like if the United States government has to do any one of those three?
Well, just go back and read your history of the 70s, or for those of us who lived through it, we know what inflation and high interest rates look like. It's ugly. We're not going to default. The reserve currency of the world will not default. We would print, I think, before we did that. But what will happen is the bond market will inc- increasingly raise rates as they see risk. And, you know, that could increasingly put pressure on the dollar. That means we have less buying power when we want to go overseas.
All right.
Stuff. When we go to Walmart or when we're buying energy, it costs more.
All right, John. Well, let me challenge you there a little bit, because the bond market has been relatively well-behaved. Every week, of course, we have new bonds and treasuries that are put out there, and the interest rates seem to be holding at a rather low level. Now, maybe that's artificial, but wouldn't we start to see an increase in the interest rates even now if the bond market is a forward-looking market?
First of all, the bond market doesn't look that far forward. I think we're probably talking, we'll see a benign interest rate environment up till 2013, at which point the bond market will say, we need to see some serious leadership on the deficit here. In the studies, if there's a very, very important book, besides my book, of course, by Carmen Reinhart and Ken Rogoff, called This Time is Different, where they look at 266 financial crises in 60 different countries. And what you find out is, everybody says this time is different, but it's never different this time. That's the irony of their book title. Things go along, everybody says it's no problem, we're different, and then you have the bang moment, and it all changes. We haven't come to our bang moment yet. Greece and Ireland have come into their bang moment. Portugal is in the middle of its bang moment. Canada avoided a bang moment. They had a crisis in the 90s, but they got aggressive with their budget. They got aggressive with dealing with it and were able to work and grow their way out of it because they didn't wait till they had a serious crisis. I mean, you have to be careful saying the bond market is telling you something or the stock market is telling you something. What was the stock market telling us by making new highs in 2007 and then later in 2008? It couldn't see more than 3 months ahead. It completely missed the Lehman thing till it happened, and then, of course, the bottom fell out. The bond market is a momentum, bond and the stock market are momentum machines.
All right.
And they work off emotion. And over time, they react to valuation. And the bond vigilantes, when they show up, it's hard to get them back out of the room.
All right. We're talking to John Malden, everybody, author of the book Endgame, The End of the Debt Supercycle and How It Changes Everything. So, John, I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and give us some recommendations of what we should be doing now.
Well, as a country, we need to start having a national conversation and decide, we can do all sorts of pro-growth policies and we can, rationalize Medicare and do other things, drill and create energy policies. Those are all wonderful. What we really got to decide is how much Medicare do we want and how are we going to pay for it? And it requires compromises on both sides. And because nobody wants to have Medicare cut, but nobody wants to raise taxes. And we're talking $1 trillion here. That's where the deficit's at. As individuals, you need to pay attention to what the government is doing, because if they don't get serious about it, we're going to have another credit crisis, another financial crisis that will be just as big as 2008. And so you need to have, in investment terms, what we call tail risk in your portfolio. You need to tail risk protection, rather, for that crazy event that comes along like 2008. And can create real volatility in the markets. And in fact, that's in our book, we describe some of these events. And we think that we're getting ready to, for the rest of this decade, we're going to be seeing more volatility rather than less.
Now, that's interesting, because the VIX, which is a measure of the volatility on the New York Stock Exchange, or actually all the stock exchanges, is not reflecting that volatility right now. In fact, the VIX is at an all-time low, but certainly a low compared to, say, the 1990s.
It is, and because the VIX is looking at where we are today. And it does look out a little bit, but not all that long. And it's not a terribly good predictor of the future. But you'll see that volatility increase more more and more unless governments get their fiscal act together. I mean, look at the problems you're having in California now with your debt and your budgets, and you're being forced, you're going to be forced to deal with the issues. Politicians don't want to.
That's right.
But the reality is the market will eventually say, you know, we're not so sure we want to lend money to California unless we see a plan for you guys to be able to structure things right. I think Illinois is in worse shape.
What about New York and New Jersey?
New Jersey's trying to deal with it. They've got a big hole. They've got a big hole, but at least they've stopped digging. Illinois, they're still digging their hole. I mean, the first rule of when you're in a big hole, stop digging.
Right.
You know, and then start figuring out how you can get out of there. Each state's going to have its own conversation. And what happens is if you raise taxes too much, those states, you know, businesses look around and say, as you and I were talking before the show, you can get a 20% income increase by moving to a no-tax state. And more California businesses are deciding to do that. Well, that's not good for your state.
Not at all.
And that's not good for the rest of the country because the rest of the country needs California. We need a strong, vibrant California.
We absolutely do. John, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. We're talking to John Malden, author of the book Endgame, The End of the Debt Supercycle and How It Changes Everything. John, if people want to listen to more, learn more about you, where would you direct them to go on the Internet to learn more?
Well, just Google John Malden, M-A-U-L-D-I-N, or go to johnmalden.com. I have a newsletter that goes to 1 million people, and they can sign up for free. They can be one of my 1 million closest friends. Read about not just the end game, but about, you know, what area it is that I'm thinking about that week.
All right, John. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you. And remember,